Perfect. So, welcome everybody. How was lunch? Was it good? Okay. Perfect. So, I'm proud to stand here with Walt today, former Cisco Distinguished Engineer for over 12 years, to present about software-defined networking and the different solutions from the different vendors we got here. My name is Thomas Maurer. I'm a cloud architect at ITnetix and the Microsoft MVP for Hyper-V. And let me give the word to Walter then.
Okay, good afternoon. It's a pleasure to actually bring you some mixed information about software-defined networking. So, the first question, of course, is: what is SDN, software-defined networking? Sometimes you hear SDN could also stand for Stanford-defined networking, for the simple reason that it was invented at Stanford University. And then there are some nasty guys which came up with other abbreviations like SDN stands for Still Does Nothing, right? Which is not quite the truth. Okay, so anyway, what has been done in the past is really that different customers have been asked what their expectations is regarding SDN. And you see here, this is really incredible wealth of answers that actually came back. The main rule here is it's software. Software is flexible, can be changed very easily, whereas hardware has a much longer development cycle, ASIC development typically 2+ years. And therefore, overall, you can see the concepts or the conception behind SDN is really simplified operations, enhanced agility, and new business opportunity. And we will actually show in this 1 hour whether this is really true or not, because the expectation of SDN is really very high. Okay? So, some basic definition: what is SDN? Now, this is very simple. It is the separation of a network, active network component, to separate the control and the data plane. So the control plane would be typically running the dynamic routing protocol. The data plane would be forwarding of frames, Ethernet frames typically, or IP packets. So it means that SDN would actually have a central intelligence taken out of the box of a network, active network component. And the idea was this central intelligence or SDN controller would then actually be the source of everything and loading the flow tables down to switches and routers, which then would be much cheaper. And this, of course, is the expectation that might be true or not true. Now, you definitely heard OpenStack. What is OpenStack? OpenStack is an open software for building public and private clouds. It actually consists of several projects covering compute, networking, and storage. You see the project, the names: NOAA, Neutron, and Swift. It is very popular these days. There is a new release coming out every 6 months. Today, it's actually Ice House called release. In October next month, we will be coming out with a Juno release. Now, Interestingly enough, up to very recently, this open source software didn't care about backwards compatibility. And therefore, it was a major pain in the neck to do a software migration to a newer level once you were in production. Now, it is also interesting to note that 90% of all the operating systems which are running OpenStack are Ubuntu and CentOS, okay? So maybe that's the wrong place, and I challenge Tom after that what Microsoft is doing in this space. And last but not least, I can also tell you, if you look at the countries where OpenStack is very much available and in production or in proof of concept, then US is number one, but then you would be very surprised that number two is India, number three is China, number four is France. Who the heck? I don't know. I have one explanation, because CERN, Centre Européen pour la Recherche Nucléaire, they are probably counted to be part of France, although it is 50-50 in Switzerland and France, because CERN in Geneva is one of a big, big open user of OpenStack software, and they also contributed a lot in this development. Okay? So the next buzzword is OpenFlow. What is OpenFlow? OpenFlow is one of many protocols which is running between the SDN controller and the active network components, be it a switch or a router. And you see, by the way, the URL where you can get much more information. And then last but not least, we will be discussing a lot about overlay networks, because overlay network is a hot topic in SDN and of course also in OpenStack. And there is a big confusion going on there. Overall, I can say as a networking person, overlay networks are available since many years. VLANs have been mentioned, but multi-protocol label switching, OTV, LISP, GRE tunnels are available, and this is nothing else than an overlay network. But you see, and you will hear in this next couple of days, a lot of talk about NVGRE, protocol for encapsulation, VXLAN, and the newest baby here is called Genève, because I don't know, they didn't call this Geneva, but Genève. And this is a new encapsulation protocol which has been proposed, and it's in the IETF standardization track by Microsoft and VMware. I mean, very interesting, right? Red Hat and Intel, and at the moment there is only one Geneve implementation. It's a 40 gig adapter from Intel, Ethernet adapter, which has been announced very recently.
So Cisco is not part of Geneve, right?
Correct.
Okay.
That's a detail.
So. Walter talked about OpenStack, and basically it's not like really important for SDN, because you can do SDN without OpenStack, of course. But when he talked about OpenStack, he was mentioning that we have Ubuntu and all these open source solutions. But Microsoft is also doing a lot of work and investing a lot of work here. They do not really promote that, but they don't work that in like a secret lab or something. Everything is public. And the Microsoft approach here is to have a full-featured hypervisor support in OpenStack. So if you go to the support matrix of OpenStack, you can already see the latest release, which supports Windows Server 2012 R2, which has a lot of checkboxes checked. There are still some left, but Microsoft does a great job there fixing that. Microsoft, there's not quite like a future roadmap or anything about Microsoft, what they invest in OpenStack or something, but they are working on it. So they do a lot of development there together with cloud-based solutions to be in that project. So the other thing I want to talk about is OpenVSwitch, which is basically not really a part of OpenStack, but it's a component, you can call that, or it's important for OpenStack. So with the release of Windows Server 2012, Microsoft introduced this extensible virtual switch. And what they are building now is extensions for that switch to make OpenVSwitch work with Hyper-V. So this is already running. This, you can download this. This is open, public available. And it supports like Chiri and VXLAN as well. Okay. So that was just a quick look at what Microsoft does in that space. But I think most of the people here are interested in System Center. I hope so, at least. Let's see.
OK. So a few concepts that are integrating SDN are the following. We will be talking about two types of networks, an underlay network, which is the network like you are used to it since many, many years, of course. It consists of physical components, Ethernet switches, routers, and so forth. It's essentially static, cost-effective, or very very expensive, if depending on which side you are, power and space efficient. And then over that underlay network, there is the so-called overlay network, which you are probably interested if you do network virtualization, which brings you the dynamic feature which is missing in the underlay network. And of course, one of the pain points in this concept is how can the overlay network see anything from the underlay network and vice versa? If something is not going well, how do you actually troubleshoot this? Second point, decoupling of identity and location, I think is very important and very well misunderstood. Once, when the IP architecture, networking architecture was designed, an IP address doesn't have the separation of identity and location, okay? So, this means if I have a PC and have an IP address and I move from here down to back home to Zurich or Bern, then I might get another IP address. What would be desirable is really to have a decoupling of identity, which is my end device, wall today, and then location would be here in Basel today, but if I go back home, it is Zurich or Vienna or whatever. But my identity would be still be the same, okay? And this is a concept which is key in the space of SDN and overlay network. And last but not least is the centralized controller or the SDN controller, which is actually nothing else than a mapping database between identity and location. Now, let me give you a short example. Here, you see three servers, A, B, C, and there is an application A and an application B. This guy here is connected to switch 1, this to switch 2, and this to switch 3. Now, this switch could be a physical switch, it could be a hypervisor or virtual switch, okay? Now, if application A wants to communicate with application B, what happens is the IP frame is actually sent to the switch. The switch will do a lookup in the mapping database, mapping the identity of application B to the location of B. So the location of B is switch 2, So we construct actually here a encapsulation frame where the encapsulation header contains the location of the destination. And then the inner part here is the original frame. So the frame is now sent over a regular IP network to switch number two. Switch number two and decapsulates this and sends the message to application B. What is important to know is this process has to be done packet by packet, okay? So it means if you do this in hardware, in ASIC, you can do this at wire rate at 10 gig and 40 gig. If you do this in software, you might consume or you have to consume CPU cycles and you introduce latency as well. Now what happens if application B is now moved to server C, and this is our new scheme that applications are no more static bound essentially to one server, but the applications are moved around. Live migration, vMotion, and the like. Now, what happens then is that the mapping database is updated, so the identity of application B is now pointing to server C, and once server A communicates with application B, then the lookup here will be automatically redirected to server C, and there will be an encapsulation which is actually sending this packet to switch number three. So this is what conceptually is important to understand, because later on you see things like VX, LAN tunnel, and so forth. Okay? Now, here at the left-hand side, you see what is done today in the old-fashioned Cisco, Juniper, whatever world, where you have an active network component, control plane and data plane on every switch or router, and then you have an API and your proprietary CLI API to configure this. This is the concept of SDN, where you move the control plane out of the box. You have a central controller where you actually send the information about flows to the data plane, and the protocol, as you as I mentioned before, is open flow, but there might be vendor-specific protocols as well. Now, a hybrid approach would be to actually mix these two schemes. So you would have a switch, and then some of the ports are actually controlled by SDN controller, and some other ports are controlled by the control plane, which is embedded in the switch. Now, this is another picture which gives you the same information. So you see here the old-fashioned approach, a network, active network component, APIs, tightly coupling hardware and software. So you might have a Cisco hardware, NXOS or CatOS or you name it. Then here the SDN approach with an SDN controller, open flow protocol, talking to a dumb switch here. This is what I would call loosely coupled hardware and software, because essentially you could use any cheap hardware down here, independent of the vendor of the controller. And then last but not least is the overlay approach. Now, for those who need a picture, this is comparable to iOS, where you have a tight coupling of hard and software with the middle slide here, where the software is decoupled from the hardware running on different hardware, and essentially Skype, which is, of course, part of Microsoft, which is an overlay network over IP. Okay. So SDN players. We have taken a report, which unfortunately is almost a year old from SDN Central. SDN Central is running a website which keeps the community up to date regarding network virtualization, network function virtualization, SDN, blah, 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 and so forth. And in this report, you see all the companies which are covered. Now, when I saw this, I was really surprised. Where the heck is Microsoft? Okay? So this actually brings me over to and give the control to Tom, because this is what I asked him and say, why is Microsoft missing that?
Yeah, probably I couldn't find an answer right now, to be honest. Probably the report was created in 2003, and most of you already know that we are we still had to wait until the R2 release with network virtualization. We had it in 2012, but some parts were missing, like the gateway part and things like that. So probably that could be one of the options. So let's talk about the different vendors. Since this is a Microsoft conference, I will keep that one short. So, but not that's not because it's bad or something, it's just because we are on a Microsoft conference. So what VMware NSX does basically is basically building an overlay network, right? So what we do is we have our physical networks, like as Walter explained, and we do our virtual networks on top of that. As you can see, the idea behind that is that we can move applications between different hosts, different sites, different hardwares, totally not decoupled from the physical layer here. So we can move that even over WAN. That's the idea behind that, by the way. It's probably not done yet. There's still some work to do to get that working. So this slide is really important, I think. We will have this slide for the Microsoft world as well, because that explains a little bit how the things work. And I think all of the solutions we look at are basically using the same amount of components here. So what we have is we have the compute rack, where we have our hypervisor hosts. In VMware terms, it's called the hypervisor service modules, which is basically the integration in the virtual switch or the vSwitch from ES6. Then what we have is the infrastructure rack, or the infrastructure. Basically, this is called, we call it the management components, and they call it like, they use it for the controller software, which controls everything, like Walter said, like the mapping database, where which application or which server is running without moving, and probably so we can move VMs around. And to get the integration with the physical world or the rest of the world, let's say that way, put it that way, we need gateways. So we need gateways to connect in this from this overlay networks to the physical world or to the WAN or whatever. So that's the VMware approach here. We will see the same slide with the Hyper-V approach. This is something VMware really tries to push now. And what we can see is we have the whole NSX stack, and in combination with vCloud Automation Center, they try to couple applications, or let's call them services, to that. And so you can move services, you can deploy services really quickly and dynamic, and this will create your virtual networks and things like that, and will connect your VMs, different types of services you are running. So, and you heard some interesting parts from VMworld, right?
Yeah, at VMworld 2014, the general manager of network and security communicated quite openly that by that time they had 150 NSX license paying customers worldwide. Okay, now it's up to you to actually figure out if this is big or not. Because, as you know, this whole NSX development is going back to the acquisition of a company called Nicira. Okay. Now, here you see the two, three main points why customers are going with NSX. Number one is really on-demand application and services. So this is the topic of network virtualization, because as you all know, the virtualization, the network configuration of the old-fashioned underlying network is very tiresome, takes a lot of time, and people are not used to this anymore, because they said, okay, what we can do with the server virtualization, we want to do with the network as well, okay? So point number two is economics. They believe that they could improve the efficiency and also CapEx cost saving. Now this you have to challenge in the following fashion. In principle, as I mentioned before, you still have an underlay and an overlay network. So essentially it means you have two networks which you have to maintain, means you have to plan the network, you have to implement the network, you have to run the network. And what is not mentioned here is, but even VMware nowadays is actually quite open and gives this publicly as a issue, namely the fact that the server people have to do networking. When we started server virtualization many years ago, and this applies to Microsoft as well as VMware as any anything else in the open world, we introduced a virtual switch on the hypervisor, and this virtual switch by that time was a simple Ethernet switch. And you can do a lot of things the wrong way with an Ethernet switch, which actually, as a matter of fact, happened in the past. And this, as you probably have seen now, is getting more complex, because as you have seen probably in Tom's slide, NSX not only supports layer 2 switching, but it supports routing. We talk about BGP, ISIS, OSPF, and the question is, which of a typical server admin is actually capable of having the bandwidth to do this? Because this is really not a simple technology. And then, very importantly, I think, security. At the VMworld 2014, it was mentioned of these 150 NSX paying customers, half of those were buying into NSX because of security and not network virtualization, kind of. And it has to do with micro segmentation and security, okay? Which is a valid point. Okay, because NSX, as a matter of fact, also supports not only layer 2 Ethernet switching, routing, but also firewalls, distributed firewalls, distributed load balancer, and so forth. So it's a very a valid solution from the security point of view. Okay.
Yeah, and some other things I want to add here is, like, when we talk about economics, it's probably the license cost. I think, if I'm right, you license that per VM, and you pay around...
Officially, it's $35 per VM per month. Okay, but that's a theoretical number, which...
Me as a Hyper-V guy,
I wouldn't count this too much. This would probably could be downgraded to zero or almost zero If yeah. you're a happy customer, so what?
Yeah, okay. I've just to point that out a little bit as a Hyper-V guy. So, so next up now, Microsoft Hyper-V Network Virtualization. So probably you already have checked. Did someone in this room already try or implement Hyper-V Network Virtualization in the lab? Okay, nice. Did someone also already deployed some production environments? Oh, that's good, good, surprisingly. Perfect. So this is the slide I always show first when I talk about with customers about network virtualization. And I try to explain them what they really can do with that or what's the idea behind network virtualization. Basically, network virtualization is the same thing which we did with the physical server years ago. So what we are doing is we are replacing the physical, or not replacing, we are using the physical network and build virtual networks on top of that. Okay, so Microsoft for that scenario right now in Windows Server 2012 and Windows Server 2012 R2 is using NVGRE, the NVGRE protocol to achieve that. So that's like the virtual networks. And if you have a look at the components we need for network virtualization, basically network virtualization is built in into the hypervisor. So it's already in Windows Server or in the free Hyper-V server. It's built in, you can use that, you can build that around. But still you need other components to make use of the network virtualization if you want to use in your production environments. One thing here is the controller here, or as Microsoft calls it, the central policy stores. And this in this release in system, we have that in System Center Virtual Machine Manager. So if you really want to do network virtualization and scale, and you want to move VMs from one host to another, or from one data center to another, you have to use Virtual Machine Manager, which updates the lookup tables or the addresses from each Hyper-V host all the time. So just make sure if you want to use it, the controller, that would be Virtual Machine Manager. And then we have this other component, like in VMware, we need in NSX, we need gateways to connect to the physical world. With Windows Server 2012, we had third-party solutions from different vendors, which actually weren't that good, to be honest. And then Microsoft, with the R2 release, brought Windows Server-based NVGRE gateway. You can also cluster that gateway. If you look a little bit more about the gateway, and we will talk a little bit more about the gateway in a second, basically what it is Windows Server with the features routing and RAS and direct access. So basically, you connect it to both worlds. You connect it to the virtual layer, and you connect it to the physical layer. And this will be a multi-tenant gateway. So when we a little bit talk more about Hyper-V network virtualization, about the concepts, there are two things you have to understand, two simple things, basically, which are built in. So first, you have the VM network, or as it's called, the routing domain, which basically is the isolation of a network or of the virtual network. If you have that, you cannot connect from one virtual network to another without having a gateway in between or something which routes that. Then you also have virtual subnets. So you can have multiple subnets in one VM network. So for example, here in this graphic, we see two companies. One is Contosa and one is Fabricam. Both of them have a virtual network, which is the boundary. And we have Fabricam, which is the last boundary. And inside those virtual networks, we have the virtual subnets. So you can run multiple subnets. They are automatically routed between each other inside that VM network, but they cannot really connect to the other virtual network, which makes sense, of course. And then, if we have a look at that, this is basically what the problem is. Like, we have two customers, like here we have customer blue and customer green, and they both use the same subnet, for example. So that would be like a hoster scenario or something. We have the 10.0 networks, which are basically the virtual networks or the networks the services are running in. So we also have this, let's call it the physical network here, which is basically, in Microsoft terms, this is the provider address space. So that's the underlying network where the physical world is connected. So if one VM wants to talk to another VM running on our host, this package includes the customer address space. So that would be like the IP you see in your virtual machine, the IP you use to communicate. And this package, if it gets sent from one Hyper-V host to another, gets encapsulated and will be sent over the provider address space on the physical world. So the virtual world does not really see the physical world. It doesn't know it exists. It still thinks I'm a package sent to another server, and it doesn't really care about the underlying network. So that's the key concept here, how this works. And as you can see, we have this GRE tags here, or GRE keys, which mark the virtual subnet. The next thing would be the Hyper-V network virtualization gateway, or the gateways itself. There are two gateways. One is the default gateway. This is built into network virtualization by itself. So every IP, every .1, in each virtual subnet is reserved for the router. So every package in a VM network can be routed from a virtual subnet to another virtual subnet via that router. And this is on every Hyper-V virtual switch. So it's called, it's a method called distributed routing. So you can send packages. So if one VM communicates with another VM in a different subnet on the same Hyper-V host, it just gets routed to the virtual switch and gets back to the other VM. It will never leave the Hyper-V host itself if the VMs run on the same network. On the same host, sorry. This is one of the scenarios. The other thing is, like I said, the Hyper-V network virtualization gateway, which is needed to connect to the physical world or to the, internet or WAN or whatever. And in the solution Microsoft offers right now, you have three components or three possibilities. You have the site-to-site VPN, which is a huge demand, especially for hosters. So if you're hosting your VMs in Azure or on another service provider, a local service provider, you want to extend your local network to your hosted VMs, you use site-to-site VPN. That's one thing the gateway can do. It can also do NAT rules, so if you want to host virtual machines behind that, you can do simple NAT, or you can use, they call it dynamic routing, which allows you to route to other networks, but in that case, of course, you cannot have overlapping networks, right? Otherwise, it wouldn't work. So some notes on Hyper-V network virtualization. Very simple, the first point. We create virtual networks or overlay networks on the on top of the underlay network or on the physical network. So we are not need any kind of special hardware. When we talk about switches or something, you don't need to change your network. For that, there's a small point here. If I tell you that we don't need any special hardware, it's still recommended to have special network cards which support NVGRE offloading. So Walter was talking about the offload or the CPU cycles you need when you do it on software. You can offload that with special network cards. There are some network cards from Mellanox that can do that. They're a little bit expensive, but they can do it. We can take that offline if somebody is interested in which cards they are. And then Hyper-V network virtualization uses a standard like the NVGRE standard, which is an open standard, which is not like just something from Microsoft and something no one else can use. Everyone can integrate with NVGRE. And then we have some improvements. One improvement I really want to talk about in R2 is the dynamic IP address learning in virtual networks. So we talked a little bit about that controller and the mapping database. And if you think about, you have this mapping database, and you know that this virtual machine is running on that Hyper-V host in this data center. The mapping database knows about that. So what's happening if you change the IP address or the customer changes the IP address of that server or that VM? In 2012, your VM lost connection because the hypervisor didn't realize the IP has changed. Now in 2012 R2, they made this change, so they now can see the IP address running inside that virtual machine, and if the IP is updated from the customer inside that virtual machine, Virtual Machine Manager gets notified about that change and pushes out a new policy to all the Hyper-V hosts with that information. So that's a really cool feature which was needed to run it in production, I think. It's really important for that. So this is one, the thing from the Microsoft side. Let's switch back to Cisco.
Okay. So I first come back to this one slide that I used in the beginning, where you see the old-fashioned approach in networking, control plane, data plane per box, then the SDN approach with a centralized controller talking to cheap boxes, and then the hybrid approach, which I mentioned as well. Now, what I would like to highlight here is, in the case of overlay networks, one should not forget that an overlay network also has a data plane and a control plane. It's a virtual control plane. And at one point, as Tom was mentioning, there must be a connection between the virtual control plane and the physical control plane. And that's something which might be challenging, because the question is, what kind of routing protocol are you using in the underlying network? What kind of routing protocol are you using in the overlay network? Now, I would like to move to the right edge here, where you see yet another solution. And this solution has been introduced by Cisco under the ACI complex, application-centric infrastructure. And it's a policy-based controller. A policy-based controller is kind of a superset of an SDN controller, in the sense that a policy is defined here, and the policy defines what to do on a edge device, be it a load balancer, a firewall, a switch, a router, but it doesn't tell exactly how to do it. It pushes the policy what to do. And therefore, you see here the policy plane. But before I go into detail what this ACI is all about, I would like to highlight another virtual overlay network which is available since four plus years, where Cisco has essentially 8,000 plus customers today, and it's called Nexus 1000 V. V for virtual. This is a virtual machine which is hypervisor agnostic. So there is a solution for ESX, there is a solution for Hyper-V, and there are also solutions for open source hypervisors like KVM and Xen. It is essentially a layer 2 switch. It's a distributed Ethernet switch. It has northbound interfaces to OpenStack REST API. It has southbound interfaces. And what you see here as well is there is a software-based VXLAN gateway. So you can actually create here LAN segments based on VXLAN tags to actually bypass the VLAN limitation in size of about 4,000 VLANs to go up to 16 million VXLAN segments. And sooner or later, you need, of course, also a capability to go from this VXLAN segment to a plain physical VLAN in the outside world. Now, this is a layer 2 switch. Cisco also has virtualized router components called CSR, Cloud Services Router 1000. And as you see here, there are virtualized appliances like security gateways, ASR gateways, and other components, network analysis modules, and the like. Okay, so let me now move to this other solution, which is called ACI, which stands for Application-Centric Infrastructure. And the building blocks of this solution are the following. You see here this in contrast to NSX, for example. As an example, this is a solution which consists of hard and software, right? Which for some people is a challenge. But you see here it the hardware components are a Nexus 9500, 9300 called switches, which are high-speed, low-latency Ethernet switches, but also with a routing capability. And if I say high-speed, it means it's a 10 gig, 40 gig. So it's a spine leaf architecture, as you see in a moment. The spines are 40 gig, the leaves are 10 gig, and the whole platform is actually 100 gig ready. Then the second component is the policy model, because as the name implies, application-centric infrastructure, it is really a top-down approach in the sense that the application should tell the network what kind of requirements it needs and not the other way around, or even have the application being totally isolated from the network. And I will talk more about this in the next slides. And then last but not least, there is this APIC controller, application policy infrastructure controller, which is a superset of an SDN controller. And as a differentiator, you should also note that this controller is actually not only controlling the virtualization and the physical components, but it also allows you to monitor the and troubleshoot the virtual as well as the physical network of this ACI solution. Now, this is a slide which shows you in more detail how this whole fabric looks like. So you see here spine switches, 40 gig, here the leaf switches. Each leaf is connected to each spine. Each spine is connected to each leaf. There is no connection between the spines. There is no connection between the leaf. And this is now implementing the decoupling, remember what I did initially, of the identity and location and the policy. For example, here, if this virtual machine is talking to this virtual machine, this might be a Hyper-V system. This might be an ESX system. So internally, we are using VXLAN encapsulation. So this means that this system here has an identity, XYZ, and the location is actually this leaf switch, which is the entry into this tunnel, this blue tunnel going over here. Which means if a IP packet is sent from here over here, then we do the encapsulation as is indicated here, payload, IP, then the VXLAN header, and this VXLAN transport endpoint, and then send this over here. The network up here has absolutely no clue. It's plain vanilla IP. And here, of course, you can see very easily, now you can move your server, your application from anywhere to anywhere. And very important, especially compared to other solutions, this solution works for virtualized as well as for non-virtualized environments, okay? Because, you know, this VXLAN encapsulation, if I have a hypervisor, I can say, okay, the hypervisor does the encapsulation, and we are okay. We have a tunnel endpoint going into the fabric. But the question is, if this is a Windows 2012 R2 host without any virtualization, who does the encapsulation? And the important point is, in this solution, this leaf switch can actually do the encapsulation. So it's really important that we can do both. Now, the solution, as is indicated here, is totally agnostic to the hypervisor. It supports, of course, Hyper-V. It supports vSphere, but it also supports KVM Xen. And therefore, you see here whether this encapsulation is VXLAN to the southbound or NVGRE. It doesn't matter. Internally, we are actually using a VXLAN encapsulation, but you see here the different combinations there are, okay? Now, some of you might have heard about UCS service profiles. In the ACI solution, we have a construct called application network profile. An application network profile is a stateless definition of the application requirements. You see over here a three-tier application, web, application, database, and you specify what kind of requirement do you need here in between. Be this security services, be this load balancers, be this IP connectivity. And this is totally abstracted from any infrastructure implementation. In particular, it is independent of any IP addresses and the like. There is also no VLAN dependencies of any kind. Therefore, you see here that this application network profile is defined here, and then it is this APIC controller which pushes the policy to the end devices which are in use. Excuse me. This could be a firewall, this could be a router, this could be an Ethernet switch. And the IP addresses are fully portable. I could move my application network profile from one data center to another data center. It will work because it's a total abstraction of the situation. Now, a word here regarding APIC controller. The APIC controller has a southbound interface, it has northbound interface. Here, you see, by the way, that there is a new protocol which is in the IETF standardization called OPFlex, where Microsoft, Red Hat, and Cisco and Citrix were actually writing this standard. And over time, this OPFlex is the protocol how an APIC will communicate to a a point in the periphery of this ACI solution. The other method would be a device package, which would be scripting, but this is for the time being. And you see, ACI solution also includes non-Cisco devices like F5, Palo Alto components, M-Brain, and others. From the northbound point of view, Puppet Jeff's Puppet is actually used to configure this whole fabric here. I should mention here that OpenStack integration is done, and Microsoft Azure Pack is also supported in this context. And Microsoft was part of the launch of ACI when Cisco launched this in New York. And I can also tell you, at the moment, Cisco supposedly has about 900 customers for ACI. I have no information how many of those are in production and how many are test installations, but it's quite impressive. Tom?
The great thing here, again, we heard that in the keynote or before the keynote, Cisco and Microsoft doing a lot of work together. And that's not just words. They already do that, like they do for System Center, they do integration packs, management packs, and so on and so on. And of course, they also integrated with this. So the APIC controller can talk to System Center Virtual Machine Manager, and he can work then with the logical switch you deployed from System Center Virtual Machine Manager to the Hyper-V hosts and can control that. So whatever you do then in the APIC or whatever you use to configure the APIC, it talks with Virtual Machine Manager and updates the Hyper-V hosts.
Okay. So what are the conclusions? The conclusions regarding SDN, coming back to the beginning, which started with SDN. So you see, year 2011, the world was quite simple, open flow. Stanford University, Stanford Defined Network, is not so wrong. There are essentially a meeting room with a couple of chairs, and this is the situation 2014. It became very, very crowded. And you see here, there is open flow, multi-protocol software-defined network. There is something here, network function virtualization, which is mainly service provider orientation, which has not too much to do with network virtualization. So it became very, very crowded. Therefore, the key takeaways are SDN, it's not top of mind. You should also be aware that there is some limited understanding, and what I would highlight, there is a lot of misunderstanding. So if someone talks about SDN, it is very good to actually ask the question, can you please explain what you mean by SDN, right? And I can tell you, you will get as many answers as you ask people. And last but not least, I would also highlight the fact that you should be aware that a problem has to be solved. It's not for the sake of technology that you do SDN, because it might be too expensive, too risky, and a waste of time, okay?
Exactly. That's the same thing I want to say. I mean, adoption will require a proven use case. So you're not going to say, like, I want to do SDN. So you want to say, I want to have a dynamic, flexible network, for example, like building a hosting environment or something that makes sense, and then you go to SDN. It's not something you just want to build because you want that. You need a use case to do it, right?
Okay. The next point is the adoption will be IT-led. I mean, just to highlight, also the SDN name implies networking. It is an IT issue, and therefore It is CEO, CIO, CFO community that has to approve such a project. It's much more than only networking.
So next one, no one owns the space yet. So still, Cisco is one of the big leaders in networking, and there are other companies as well. But there is no one you can say like, yeah, that's the key player or something, or that's the solution you have to do. Probably it will be Microsoft from my point of view. But no one owns the space right now. So there are different solutions, as you say, have seen. There is no one like really going forward.
Okay, physical networks are important part of SDN. And in particular, you need some way that your overlay network is capable talking to your underlying network just in case there is an issue, a problem, that you know where the problem actually is.
So on the other side, the overlay network or the tunneling protocol used for the overlay network, you need one, but it's not really like the most important part of that. So whatever you use, you achieve basically the same thing, but using different protocols. There always will be a talk about which protocol is the best one, which one would be the one to choose. If this is VXLAN or NVGRE, we see a lot of multi-vendor solutions right now are in development. So it's probably that other vendors will do not just one solution, they will support probably multiple solutions, right?
Okay, multi-site, disaster recovery site is important. It doesn't only apply to SDN, but to network virtualization in general. Network virtualization today is mainly something which happens in the data center, but a lot of customers, most customers, are actually running a multi-site data center, DR site. And therefore, the question is, how do you actually link these centers in the case of a failover and so forth?
The next one is a really interesting one because we have the same thing, not only in networking, we have the same problems right now also in storage, right? So if you're using SDN, and you will have an impact on your organization. So who is doing the network virtualization? Is it the server admin or is it the networking guy? Who is doing that? So you will have that problem, and there is no, I think, no easy solution. Who is doing that?
Okay, and last but not least, SDN is exciting networking, and therefore there is a job protection for those who are in this space for the next couple of years. Okay?
Okay. Perfect. Sorry, we took a little bit more time. We will be out there in the Ask the Experts area to take your questions. We will also be here the next few days to talk about that. So if you have any questions about, please join us. I want to point out there is another session right after this one about how to build a service provider cloud with the Microsoft stack. And they will also show you some of the parts we talked about here about Hyper-V network virtualization. So if you're interested in that, I really recommend this session. And yeah, have a nice day.